What's up, everybody? This is another episode of For What It's Worth. I'm your host, Wes Hoffman. Thanks so much for tuning in. I appreciate it. I feel like that just rolls off my tongue now, that whole intro phrase that I say there. So this episode is with Mike Asatley, who is in a band called Unseemlier, where he plays guitar and sings. They just put a new record out on Sell the Heart Records. And then he also plays drums in a band called Little Low, which we had Christine from Little Low on the show a few episodes back. So that's really cool. I like when that happens and like things are kind of all connected there. You know, and you have one person that plays in a band, and then you have another person that they play in the same band, but they have other projects. I like talking to people who do multiple things, you know what I mean? So, but we talk a lot about, Little Low. We talk a lot about Unseemlier. They both have releases on Sell the Heart Records. I don't know if I said that already. Sorry if I did. but we talk about that a little bit, and we talk about just like making connections in, I don't even want to call it the music industry, but making connections in this punk rock community world that we live in. And, you know, we're always trying to kind of, everybody's trying to do their thing. Everybody's trying to tour. Maybe not everybody, but people are trying to tour. They're trying to put records out, and you have to make connections to make this happen. And I've always been told, like, hey, it's not what you know, it's who you know. And that's a really big part of the music world, from my experience, is just making connections, knowing people. And if you're a good networker and you're a good person, like, usually it comes pretty it can come pretty naturally. So, but we talk about that because Mike also does booking for bands that come through like the Boston area. So that was really cool to kind of touch on that as well. So I mentioned this last week, but my band, Wes Hoffman and Friends, we have a new song out called After Hours. I played it on the episode from last week. I will forego playing it again this week. I thought about playing the song again, but just listen to the song on your favorite streaming service if you haven't heard it yet. So we just hit 10,000 streams like a couple days ago. So I was super stoked on that. Thank you to everybody who's been checking it out. That really means a lot. Like, it has only been out for 10 days and we hit 10,000 streams. And that was a big, that's like what I consider to be the first milestone. it's been really cool that people have been checking it out and liking it. So thank you again, everybody, for tuning in. Thank you for listening to the song. If you do want to support this podcast, please give us a rating and a follow on whatever podcast app you're listening to this on. And enjoy this episode with Mike Asatley. Mike Asatley,
yep.
Of Unseemlier,
yes,
Little Low, and yep. Lower Worlds Booking, right?
Yes.
Okay, was there anything else in there that you do that I missed?
Not currently, no.
Okay, just awesome.
I live life.
Yeah. you seem I'm not doing any formal introduction. That was the introduction. So you seem like a kindred spirit to me, because it seems like you do a lot of, I had Christine on last week, and she told me that you're like an entrepreneur, that you had like a weed delivery business in California, and you do booking, and you're in a couple bands. So it seems like you're the kind of person kind of like me, where you have your foot in a lot of different doors, or your hand in a lot of different cookie jars. I don't know how you, what the best term is, but.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I just, I don't know. I stay busy, I guess. And to the detriment of my health and sanity, but you know, it is who we are. Some of us are just wired that way.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I definitely learned, I've definitely learned sometimes, like, I take on projects and like, then after a few months, I'll be like, okay, I have totally worn myself too thin here. Like, this was bit off way more than I can chew. You know, and then I always have to like reel it back and reassess. But then I'm trying to find that balance for sure.
Same. That's what a lot of the new Unseemly record is actually about, is me realizing, sadly, at the age of 37, that I need to chill the fuck out or else I'm going to be done by 40. You know, like, I'm just burning the candle at the both ends for way too long, whether it's, like, going out and skateboarding in the morning, working all day, having a band practice, and then booking and running a show that I'm not even playing. Like, it's just, you know, and then wake up the same day, the same time next day, 6 a.m. to do at least two of those activities again. And you just, like, you know, when the weekend comes, if you're in a band, you don't rest on the weekend, you play on the weekend. So eventually I just, it's a no rest scenario, and I just end up, you know, zombifying for at least a couple days, you know, whether it's taking whatever, getting a lucky light day at work and then taking the next day off or not doing anything on a weekend. But yeah, I've really had to dial it back. So.
Yeah.
Still
no,
learning.
No, I totally get that, man. Yeah. So you play drums in Little Low.
Yep.
What do you do in Unseemlier?
I sing and play guitar, and I use the term sing loosely because it's not beautiful, but it's what I do. But yeah, I sing and play guitar in that, and drums in Little Low.
Okay, awesome. So what would you consider to be your main interest or your main instrument, drums or guitar?
Long story short, I started on stringed instruments, but my best friend at the time wanted to start a band, and he had no instruments. And I said, cool, I have a bass. And he goes, I'm going to get a bass. I go, why? We need drums. And he just completely ignored me. So I ended up having to get drums. And then my older brother, who is way less cool than me now, but was cooler than me then, needed a drummer. So it just kind of became my thing for a very long time.
That's awesome, man. No, I everybody always, so I play guitar and sing, and I can, you know, I can play bass too. But that's one thing I never learned was drums. And I wish that I would have, just because, like, it's like, you can find guitar players and bass players, and guitars can play bass and all that kind of stuff, you know, if they need to. But to find a really good drummer, luckily my band, like, we've had like six or seven, we have our main drummer, but we've had a bunch of people fill in. So we haven't really had an issue, because it's like somebody can jump in and do one tour and then, you know, jump out. Yeah. It's not like you're committing to the band forever, but, you know, I think a lot of bands, especially here in St. Louis, where I'm from, like, that's always the hardest member to find.
I think it's universal, man.
Yeah.
I get it's everywhere. It's punk drummer in general, or hardcore band drummer in general. I think the joke is that, like, they're in, you know, seven bands, 7 days a week type of thing. I've started saying, no, I won't do it. It has to be something that I really, really, really want to do for me to play drums in it.
Yeah. No, I totally get that. I bet you get hit up. Are you used to get hit up? If not, you're still getting hit up. So
no, they know now. They know now. But anytime someone needed a drummer, they would talk to me. I'd be like, dude, I just can't do. It's the most gear with the least reward, and I'm not trying to complain, but, you know, it is. Like, you're in the back, and there's the old Nora, the metalcore band from New Jersey, had the song. Oh, yeah. Nobody takes pictures of the drummer.
Right.
Like, that was the joke. Like, it's, you know, most work, least cred. So I love it. It's honestly, what's cool about it still for me is, like, I notice that if I go 2 weeks without picking up my guitar because I'm traveling for work, or, like, we have an Unseemlier show, like, I have to practice that. But you could be like, oh, hey, Mike, Little Low's going to fly to Costa Rica tomorrow and play three sets in a row. I'd be like, yeah, sure, no problem. I could close my eyes and do it. Like, drums are second nature to me now. And I think that might be why, like, guitar and singing is, like, I felt like I had to do it in a band, because I've never been the guitarist singer of a band. I've played guitar in bands. I've standalone sang, in air quotes for people listening, in bands. But I've never done them both, and I was like, all right, well, I think I can do it. And the first EP, the first Unseemlier EP, which came out, I think, like, a year and 3 months or 4 months ago now, was the first time I, like, put it on recording and had it pressed on something. It was on tape.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. That's awesome. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about, like how did Unseemlier, what was kind of the genesis of that?
So me and the drummer Kevin have been playing music together for over 16 years in one form or another, but I moved to California for about close to 10 years. And we did like a we had a hardcore band right before I left that, you know, melodic hardcore isn't popular in the United States really, so we would just actually go to Europe. So we'd go to Europe together once every 2 years, I would say, and we recorded like I flew home right after I moved to California to finish the vocals for one LP. We recorded a couple more times. It's dead now, I think. We recorded recently and it just has not recently, like last year, and it just hasn't been finished. And I don't know, Robert Cheeseman, if you're listening, finish the record. If you're not, you know, whatever you want to do with it, go nuts. But yeah, so me and Kevin have been playing together forever, and we grew up in the same hometown. Me and Chris grew up in the same hometown, but we've never really been in bands together. And yeah, I feel like I've known Chris since we were like 9 and 10 or some shit like that. And when I was moving back from California, I told both of them, like, yo, do you want to be in a band that sounds like Poison the Well, or do you want to be in a band that sounds like Hot Water Music? And they both chose Poison the Well, so I wrote the Hot Water Music one. And that's where we ended up. And yeah, I just knew that when I got back, I had to, you know, do something with my older friends. Like, I wanted to make sure there was, you know, I'm not a spry chicken anymore, so I had to make sure that there was one last thing to do. And yeah, honestly, it was like the EP was proof of concept. I didn't have enough confidence in myself to really do it. So I was like, all right, guys, I'll pay for recording, I'll pay for pressing the tapes, just do the band with me at the beginning, and we'll see how it goes. And then last recording session vocally, I actually had Andrea come. So she didn't record on the EP, but she was there for recording sessions. I played bass on the EP, but yeah, and she just joined. You know, we didn't have a bassist, and I had met Andrea right before COVID when I was back here briefly. And yeah, we just asked her if she wanted to be in it, and she was, and have an LP out now and doing the promo thing and the playing as much as physically possible without wearing myself out thing.
Is your LP out with Sell the Heart as well?
Yes, it is. It came out June 13th, I think. It officially launched everywhere, like all streaming platforms,
Okay.
and our record release was a couple weeks later in Boston. But
Awesome.
yep, got the LP out now. Very happy with that because, you know, leading up to it, sometimes you get antsy, and you just want to be able to like play all the songs and like be like, this is it. Here it is. It is my child has left the nest type of thing, you know?
Dude, I'm in that phase right now. We have a new song coming out a week from Friday on August 8th, and it's like it's gonna be the first single off of our new record. And it's like, you know, we've known this song for over a year now. It's probably the newest one that we recorded on the record, but some of the songs that are coming out on this record are old. You know what I mean? It's like they're like 2 years old, and by the time people hear them, it's gonna be like almost like it'll definitely be 2.5, 3 years, you know. And it's cool because people like discover your old stuff, and they're like, or they discover the record that we have out now, and it's their first time hearing it, and they really love that. And but you're like, oh man, in my mind, I'm like, just wait till you hear the new stuff. You know what I mean?
It sucks too, because like I feel like at a certain point, if you play a song so long, but you're not playing it live or it's not recorded yet, you're almost sick of it by the time it comes out on the record. You're like, God damn it, this one again. But yeah, some of the riffs that made it onto the Unseemly record, I swear to God, I've been playing for over 10 years at this point. Just like, they're just riffs that I would pick up my guitar and just start playing and remember, but I never put it in a band. So I finally like got that chance too. Which is cool. It's awesome because, you know, every once in a while you play that same thing over and over again, and you just have nothing to do with it. So I finally made the band to do those riffs with, because usually other than that was like hardcore punk, like fast stuff. So yeah, this was definitely culmination of like me personally writing music. Like I always wanted to be in bands like this because I always loved bands like this, but I just never did it. So finally I made the choice to do it as opposed to just playing another hardcore band or whatever.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. Something that you said that I really liked was like you did it to like build confidence and just to like, you know, as like a proof of concept. And that's also a thing that that I know you're a skateboarder too. Like a big thing for me with and I'm not, I don't skateboard a lot anymore, but I was for a while, like really learning. And the one thing that I really liked about skateboarding, and I think it's similar with music too, is like, you know, when I first got on my board at 38 years old, I was like scared to even like hop on it. Like even getting on it was like, oh, is it going to slip out from under me? And then, you know, before I know it, I was like a week later, I was just jumping on it, no problem. And I feel like skateboarding was one of the most, like the perfect example of just building confidence and like building every little step, because it's like, first, like just rolling around was even hard. And then I got that down, and then I was like, you know, switching. And I just really think that that's a great example of like, hey, once I can prove to myself that I can do it, then like your confidence builds and you keep going and that kind of stuff. So. I really like what you, I really like that idea of just like proving to yourself that you can do it.
And that's like another thing too, with skateboarding in particular, not to talk too hard on that, but like when I land a new trick, there's no other feeling like that on the planet.
Yeah.
And it's not, I'm not good. I'm not doing anything crazy, especially, you know, for someone who I grew up doing it a little, but I didn't do it for a very long time. And then I rode BMX when I was like my more formative years, but my knees went out and I rehabbed them for a year. And then I was afraid to ride bikes again because I think the pedal pressure and where it hit on my foot, like it would, it just destroyed my knees. Sometimes I'd black out if I landed too hard, and then I'd have to like use my bike as a crutch to get out of the skate park. I think I watched like King of the Road or like one of the Thrasher like videos that I remember from when I was younger, but didn't really pay much attention to. I was just like, all right, I'm going to go for this again and see if I can bring back some of my old tricks and stuff like that. And yeah, again, I'm not like flying off a mega ramp or doing anything like not jumping down 16 stairs or anything, but like if I throw a little shove it out of a 50-50 or like, you know, I do like a little something different than the norm, I get so fucking stoked. And it's just like, it's a great feeling to still be able to have that at 38, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
And it's the same thing, like if, I mean, the other week, again, on the thing, the other week, Unseemly played a show, and it wasn't our biggest show, it wasn't our best show, it was all locals, it was just friends, but I played the best I've ever played in that band, and I was so fucking happy. It was like it's a high that you really don't get unless you're proving yourself to yourself, you know? And that's the thing, like, it can be cool to be in competition with other people, but like really self-acceptance and like, and the pressure you put on yourself, the reward at the end of that is ultimately the most rewarding feeling on the planet, because truly, I couldn't give a shit less what anyone really cares about me, but if I feel good about myself, then I know I won that day, you know?
Are you one of those people that would you say you're your own worst critic?
Oh yeah, hell yeah, of course. I feel like everybody is to an extent though. Yeah. You know? But yeah, I'm not, I wouldn't say I'm kind to myself. That's what I'll say. And I definitely, even at 38, I still feel like I'm a type of person who shouldn't read the comments section.
Oh,
I'll take shit to heart, and I really don't want, but you know, like I said, at the end, when it boils down to everything, like I'm going to do what I'm going to do, and I really don't care if anybody loves it or hates it. And ultimately, the best gratification is proving myself to myself. But again, like I also know that I should not be reading the comments section.
Yeah,
you know.
No, I agree with that. Like, I'm the same way. Like, I do I want people to like, especially when I first started out, like doing music again. And really like releasing music, I was like, do I want people to like it? Yes. But do I like it? Yes. Like, then that's really all that I care about. Like, because I know that there's like curmudgeon-y punk people in St. Louis that are going to be like, oh, well, you know, this isn't this, I don't like this, or well, like, it's not, you know, my music's like more melodic and pop punk. And, you know, I know that there's people that like hate on that kind of shit, but it's like, you know, it's not edgy enough or whatever, but I'm like, well, dude, I like it. And that's really all I care about. Like, it's not going to be everybody's cup of tea, you know?
Yeah. And it goes the same way. Like, a lot of people didn't like the fast shit I did back in the day, and that's fine. You know, I feel like you're never going to please everybody. And,
right.
And so ultimately you should be pleasing yourself. And if people around you like it, then that's fucking sick, you know? But yeah, I also feel like pop punk gets a bad rep because people are like, oh yeah, you're 37 singing about like, oh, I can't wait for summer and I'm holding your hand. It's like, you don't have to sing that to be in a band that sounds like that, you know?
Right.
Like, maybe people have preconceived about this type of shit. It's just like, God damn it. Like, I never did when I was younger. So now, even when I'm older, it makes me even more mad because it's like, I grew up in a group of friends that, like, you know, a lot of them were like, you know, Mohawk, like fucking, sure. I don't know, decked punk, like Global Threat, the Unseen type shit. And I liked that stuff. And then I had friends on the other side of the fence that were like, Get Up Kid Saves Day. I liked that shit.
Sure.
And then I was going to Hatebreed, these other people. Like, I was all over the board. And they would all make fun of me because I didn't really have a defined style. And I was just like, I don't get you guys. And now, even nowadays, I'm like, I still don't get it because their music serves so many different purposes and it scratches so many different itches. It just depends on the itch that needs to be scratched. And sometimes I want it to sound like Newfound Glory. Other times I want it to sound like Converge or whatever, you know, like, doesn't have to be, you don't have to be so like divided or like, closed off, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. No, I totally agree. And with that pop punk comment too, it's like, you know, I'm 42 now. I'm not singing about, like I'm singing about going through a divorce and, you know, I'm singing about like things that have been like, things that are a little bit heavier than like, you know, hanging out and having pizza with your friends, you know what I mean? But it still sounds like it still has that pop sensibility and that melody to it. Cause I've always been a melody guy. I've always just loved catchy stuff that like, you know, it catches your ear. You want to listen to it multiple times. You get stuck in your head. Like, I've always loved that kind of stuff too. And I love like hardcore and you know, today I was just listening to the whole like, Rise Against, like their, you know, I just listened to one of their albums all the way through and I was like, this is really good. You know? And it's like, it's not like hardcore. It's radio hardcore, you know, but, anyway, man, I know you do booking as well. Yeah. And, I would love to hear a little bit about how you got into like booking shows for bands.
Cool. So when I was really, really young, again, this is like when my brother was still cooler than me, which was like for about 2 years when we were like 13 and 15.
Wait, so why is he not? How did you become cooler than him?
I honestly don't know. He surfs now, and he's actually a really cool person now. I think it's because he quit riding BMX, and I continued, even though we both got our licenses. I continued with music and have played all over the world, and he buys really expensive guitars but never plays them. So I was, like, clown on him for that type of stuff. But he's got to figure it out because I traveled when we were young, but he worked in the video game industry, and he was on some, like the company he worked for went out of business. So he bought 10 $10,000 computers for $1,000. Each, flipped them all for $10,000 each, and then flew to Indonesia to surf for 3 weeks.
Oh, that's
so, like,
awesome.
He's got to figure it out now, and I'm working some chicken yard job, you know. So like, we reverse roles. He's cool again, and I don't know about myself anymore. But but yeah, we back to the show book. I think the first show me and him booked, my dad went to Florida for 2 weeks, and we had a show in our basement. And I think I was in ninth grade. So it would have been like 2001 or something like that. And I had friends. I went to a regional school, so it was like 10 towns around me all went to like a vocational school. So I learned how to weld in high school.
Oh, cool.
But I had just met these other people from towns. So I had their bands from other towns come to my dad's house while he was out of town. And we had a show. It was like 40 kids. It was cool. But that website, Just Another Scene, that I mentioned, was like a database for every venue in the Northeast, like, and whoever had the info for it, they could just put it in the, it was like basically what a Word document for tour booking would be nowadays. But you just go on the website, it would say like the Natick Elks Lodge in Natick, Massachusetts, call John 781-227-3357. And me and my brother just cold called venues all over the state. And then we found like a local band or two from that town on mp3.com and figured out how to get in touch with them, like whether it was email or whatever the day. So we started booking. Me and my friend Al booked a few shows in our hometown when we were in our teens. We had a bar called 49 Monk Street. And it's right down the street from the Outpost, which is a legendary studio in Stoughton, Massachusetts, where Dropkick Murphys recorded Do or Die.
Okay.
Like a shitload of people have recorded there. Like all the early to mid 2000s, like Bridge Nine Records releases were recorded there. And I just remember growing up near it, and like we'd ride our bike spot and like try to peek in and stuff. But we'd book that bar. And then when I actually started going on tour at like 17 or 18, I started having to return favors for people who booked me in other cities. So I started figuring it out outside of the small town. I moved to Alston, which is like a neighborhood in Boston, and friends had basements. And I just like, basically I still, to this day, I only really do it for the good karma, the you scratch my back, I scratch yours of this community that we're involved in. Cause I mean, so many people have put me on, you know? So like, I always try to return the favor, and I don't take money from it. You know, it's never been something that I wanted to do as a career. Like I have friends who liaised it in careers or whatever. I literally just see, you know, like if a band is coming through the area and they're not the most well-known band, I'll brainstorm three bands that kind of sound like them that'll bring enough people in the room so they have a good time, because so many people have done it for me in my day. And I, you know, I just paying it forward is essentially what it is, because without that, we have nothing in this community, you know? If it becomes the clicky, shitty, everybody's closed-minded type thing, and we let it go to the Live Nations and the fucking all the booking agents and stuff like that, like, we'll have nothing. Because honestly, in Boston, out of the venues now are like one of those like conglomerates has a hold on it, and there is never a local opener.
Yeah.
And it how do bands grow in an area like this when that's the case, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I figured out how to do it on my own. I bought a PA when I was really young, and I just haven't stopped. I did it. I lied. I stopped for about 2 years when I was in California, because one, I lived in the middle of nowhere, like 45 minutes outside of Willits, California, in the Mendocino National Forest. I worked at a dog rescue for a year up on a mountain. And then my first year or two back in the Bay, I didn't really do it just because I didn't. At that point, I think people forgot that I even like existed in the music realm for a little bit. So, but when friends realized I lived in the Bay and they'd be coming through in their bands, they'd be like, oh, like, who do I hit up? And I just look around and be like, I found the contact for the venue. I heard three bands that sound like you, like, I'll just do it. Well, why bother having someone else do it? And it worked, you know. So I lived in Michigan for like on and off for a year or two. I booked a few shows there, but mainly it's just been Boston and, you know, the Bay Area, Oakland and Berkeley and San Francisco.
Okay, awesome, man. No, dude, I really love, I'm very much the same way. I do a lot of booking here in St. Louis, and, you know, I book all of our tours that we do, like, most of the shows that we do, I book every once in a while. I have a manager and he helps. But I really love what you said about how it's all about kind of like, basically what I'm taking from what you're saying is like, it's all about having like a network and a connection, like all these connections, you know what I mean? That you've made over time. It's like, okay, well, you met this person while you were on tour and they put you on in, you know, Virginia Beach or something like that, or Florida or Charlotte. And then when they come to Boston, like they need help, so they hit you up. And that's really how it's supposed to work. You know what I mean? And I feel like that's really been a testament for me of how I've been able to like grow my band as well. And like, you know, I always let bands know whether they're on tour or not is, hey, when you come to St. Louis, let me know. I'm happy to help you. Because some cities, kind of like what you're saying, like some cities can be really hard to book if you don't know the person in that town that books all the shows or has a contact connection with the venue or something like that. I've always wanted to play this place in Little Rock, Arkansas called Vino's. Have you ever played there? Been through there?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
I played Vino's and I actually still know a kid that books there.
Okay.
But
okay.
He books like death metal. So I don't know if I can help you out, but I can try.
No. We got a show there. So
nice. Yeah. Right, cool.
Yeah, that's but awesome. I really had to like network and say like I had to I went to a show there a long time ago. I saw Bayside play there in like 2003 before their first album was even out. And I always wanted to play there. And I really had to find like I had to know someone who knows someone who knows someone at the venue to like, I really had to network to get in there, you know? But I think, and I hope that this isn't coming a lost art because I think people around our age still have that ethos of like, hey, I'll help you if you help me when I need it. But I do see a lot of like, I have had situations where like I've helped someone multiple times. And then when it comes time for me needing help and I reach out to them, they're like, oh, well, I really can't help you. And I'm like,
yeah,
okay. You know, but I just take it as like, you know, I don't get mad. I'm just like, okay, well, I'll figure it out. Like in that situation, I'm like, karma will get you then. You know what I mean?
Or like next time you're like, oh dude, I love the show you booked for me in St. Louis. Like, can you do it again? It's like, oh no, man, I think I'm going to stub my toe that day. I don't think I can do it. You know, I just be like, dude, it's like so much, and this is just, I think it's my life in general. It's like an ethos that punk rock taught me, but so much of my life is you scratch my back, I scratch yours. Like if you help me move furniture into my apartment, you call me, I'm doing it for you. Like,
right.
I don't think that society functions for lower class or blue collar people unless we do that for each other in all facets of our lives, you know? And I think that that's like I think it's like a lost art I think it's a lost art within punk and whatever, because I do see the same thing. I see the younger kids in my area that are like, you know, it doesn't seem like, it's like the same five bands will play with each other in Somerville, which is like a neighborhood northeast of Boston. And then the next week, they'll play a different basement in Alston, where I live. And then the next week, they'll play Jamaica Plain. And all that is like a 5-mile radius, and they'll all just play with each other. Like, there's no, like, diversity. They don't want it. They don't want to branch out. And like, 9 times out of 10, I'm saying yes. Even if it's a banger show, I'm saying yes to the one that we're going to play in front of people who have never seen us before.
Right.
You know? Rather do that than play with the same three bands over and over again that sound like us. I'd rather, you know, I want to branch out as far as possible. I feel like there's not as much community in that sense as I remember growing up, you know?
I totally agree. I think that there are like, you know, I have heard of like some of the little cliques here in town where it's like there's somebody has a house venue and they really only invite the same 5 to 7 bands to play all the time, and it's like it's just for them. It's like not really, they're not trying to branch out and play even local venues and stuff. And that's I totally agree. I think even just as neighbors, you know, me and my girlfriend, we kind of like, she has gotten to know all the people in our neighborhood that we live in, and like, you know, they're always like sometimes we need to like borrow somebody's hedge trimmer. We need to borrow something from somebody. And then when they need something from us, or they need, hey, can you watch our dog for a minute? Or, you know, that really is like how it should be. And, I do feel like we're losing a little bit of that for sure. And I even see it, dude, with like, I've gotten over this now, because there's no other thing that I can do but get over it. But like back in the day when I was younger, I grew up like an hour away from St. Louis, but this is like where the scene was happening. So I was driving all the time to St. Louis to come see shows. And I always kind of thought like, okay, if there's a band that's from St. Louis that I want to get my band to play with, because they can bring people, they have a better draw, and it'll put us in front of more people, I'm going to start going to their shows and you know, start making connections with them and like introduce myself and say, hey, I love your band. I'd love to play with you guys. Let us know when you're playing, if you're looking for anybody, and we'll do the same. We'll put you on, you know. And back then, I mean, this was like, of course, this was like 24 years ago. Like, that was a thing when it was like, if you went to somebody's show, then the next time you had a show, they would try to make it out. You know what I mean?
I've talked to Crystal about this a bunch, and friends of ours that are like older now, or like older but grew up in the same era, will ask us, or like bands will ask me, like, hey, how do I get on shows? And literally, I'm like, go to shows. Go to shows that you are not playing.
100%.
Talk to people. That's all it really takes. And also, like, in like counterculture art like this, like, if you're not supporting other people aren't going to want to support your 100%. Art. Whether you are, it doesn't matter what platform you use, if you're a painter, a musician, whatever. Like, if you're not supportive of the people around you in your circles, then you're not going to get the support you desire, you know? And I feel like, yeah, I feel the exact same way as you. If I wanted to play with a band, I would go to their shows and be like, yo, you guys are sick. We sound alike. Let's play together. Like, we'll bring our people. You'll bring your people. It'll slap. It'll be a fucking great show. Yeah, I feel like that's another thing. Like, screens have ruined a lot of people when it comes to that social connection type stuff. And yeah, just the generational gap. I feel like everything is so goddamn accessible. Like, you remember reading a thank you list and finding your new favorite band? Or,
oh,
like,
absolutely.
Like, not even some shit where you found it on the internet. You buy a compilation CD with 30 bands because for $2, because A, you're broke, and B, you just found 30 bands you've never heard before.
Right.
That was, and like, it made you really fucking appreciate it. Now Spotify tells you who to listen to next, or TikTok serves you whatever video you want to, like, you know, you like basement backpack screamo or whatever kids are into nowadays, and it serves you 30 of those videos, and now those are the only bands you like, because you don't have to dig for it anymore.
Right.
It's just stuck to you, you know. There's no hunt, there's no you know, it's like, it's hot. I feel like it's a lot the same with kids singing along. Like, a lot of people don't care about lyrics anymore. Like, when I was growing up, like, I knew every word to my favorite bands because all of that meant so much. I feel like there's just a big disconnect on all fronts now, you know?
Yeah.
It's not to get too far into that.
No, it's good. It's nice when you meet bands and when you meet other people like yourself that get that and that understand that ethos. We're really good friends with this band from Florida, from Gainesville, called U Vandal. I don't know if you've heard of them, but
I know the name. The new record. New record's fucking sick.
Oh, their new record's awesome. Yeah, it's great. I need to have them on the podcast too. But yeah, they were one where it's like, they wanted to come to St. Louis, so I booked the show for them. And then they came back at one point, and I booked them in St. Louis and Kansas City. And then when we wanted to go to Florida, they did the whole run with us. You know what I mean? And and it's like, it's not the kind of situation where it's like, oh, where you actually say, hey, well, I helped you guys with this, so will you do that? It's just like, it's more of just the understanding of like, hey, you know, this person helped us, so like let's return the favor for sure. So,
And I'll even go one further into that realm with the you scratch my back, I scratch yours type of thing. Do you know the band Squint from St. Louis?
Yeah, I do. Yep.
So Brennan, the singer, used to come to all my band shows in the Midwest, always used to support, was always around, still follow each other on the internet. And I saw that his band was playing in New York City in October. I DM'd him and was like, yo, are you trying to play Boston? He's like, yes, can you help? I was like, the show's booked. I already found a venue.
Hell yeah.
You know, like the people that I still remember, the people who actually supported me, like you, and you have this great relationship with U Vandal from Florida. Like, any of the kids that used to come see my bands when I tour all the time, or like any of them that I still have like loose contact with, I would help any single one of their bands in Boston nowadays, because it's that community that we fostered and that we had.
Yes.
Like, it still resonates very hard with me and with you. And, yeah, I mean, again, it's like, it's sick that they did the whole run with you, you know, like,
yeah.
Of course that, and that's, again, that's the, you go to the shows, you form the relationships. That's how shit actually happens. If you're not some like industry plant, like band that is manufactured in a lab,
right,
type, you know, like if you don't, if you're not like the cool dude backed hard, then that's how you get fans. You play with other bands. You, that's how you talk. You have to make those connections yourself. You know,
absolutely.
No one's doing it for you.
Absolutely. And that's a big part of like this podcast too, is like, I want to meet, this is just a really cool way for me to meet people like yourself and Christine and talk to people that I already know and build relationships with them and like, and keep it going. So, dude, we've got 2.5 minutes left, before Zoom kicks us off. Like, where
all
can
right.
people find everything, Mike Asatley, on the internet?
Lower Worlds Booking Instagram, Unseemlier Instagram. I think Little Lowe's is Little Lowe Band on Instagram. All of it's on all the streaming services. I hate to be a fucking robot and contribute to the awful people who contribute to so many awful things on the planet. But we have Instagram, Spotify. You buy the LPs, both of them from Sell the Heart Records online. Little Lowe's doing a 5-day tour. If you're listening to this,
Starting tomorrow, right?
Yeah, we leave Philly tomorrow, then Richmond Thursday the 31st, and then DC the 1st, and then New Jersey the 2nd, Connecticut the 3rd. Unseemlier's got something cooking on the East Coast. We're both playing Fest, so if you are going to Fest and you hear this, come check us out. Little Lowe's Friday, Unseemlier's Saturday. If you will scratch my back in your city, I will scratch yours in
Hell
Boston.
Yeah.
Lower Worlds Booking. Anyone who's listening, just hit me up and I'll try to make it happen.
Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. Don't watch my skateboard videos on my personal Instagram.
It's all good,
know?
Brother. Thank you so much, man. This
yeah,
was sick, dude.
It's
yeah,
great.
I know I'm going to meet you in person someday and I'm stoked. And anytime you guys want to come to St. Louis, I got you.
What do you have out there right now? Is Foo Bar still around?
No, it's this place called Red Flag now. We do this, do a lot of shows at this place called Platypus.
Cool. I
yeah.
saw that. I saw that
yeah,
on your
so.
Instagram that you do a lot of shows there. That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, I go as far back as Limp Art Space in St.
Oh,
Louis.
Wow. That's way
it's
back.
The first
yeah.
place to play
Hell yeah.
in 2006 or something. All right. Anyway,
awesome.
Thank you so much, man. I really appreciate
yeah.
it.
Thank you, brother. Yeah. I'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.